The dogs are baying and the wolves are howling. The voices that pushed for the invasion of Iraq are again revving their engines for an attack on Iran. To examine this intensifying crisis, we've reached Dr. Ahmad Sadri. He's active in Iranian politics and is a professor of sociology at Lake Forest College near Chicago. Good morning, Ahmad.
Good morning.
Now, CNN has apologized for seriously mistranslating the words of Iran's President Ahmadinejad, saying that Iran wanted nuclear weapons when what he said was actually the opposite of that. Now, mainstream media earlier reported his words as calling for, quotes, wiping Israel off the map and calling the Holocaust a myth. Are these reports accurate?
Well, the mistake that you just referred to is pretty typical. These days, this happens all the time, the way media is reporting on the situation in Iran. It's very often that people confuse the development of nuclear energy and the development of nuclear weapons. Those very, very different things are quite often jumbled, not only on air, but also in the mind of people. So the President Ahmadinejad was emphasizing Iran's right that Iran has under any regime, his government, the previous government, or even a non-Islamic government that Iran had before the Islamic Revolution, Iran has, like every country, the right to develop nuclear energy. But, of course, these days, it looks like that there is a double standard applied to Iran where the development of nuclear energy is denied Iran because of the potential that the knowledge that is gained thereby could be also used to develop nuclear weapons.
I wonder if you could comment on his words as calling for wiping Israel off the map and calling the Holocaust a myth.
Well, I should be the last person to be an apologist for Ahmadinejad. I was quite active during the election against him, and I warned both in English and in Persian in my article that I wrote at the time in Iran that if he comes to power, he will cause Iran a lot of trouble because of his inexperience and because of his blinkered fundamentalism. But his comment about Israel being wiped off the map was not a military threat, but rather it was a statement. I admit that it's an unwise statement for a leader of a country in the region to make, but it was all the same this a statement referring to something like a referendum that would politically wipe out the entity of Israel. It had nothing to do with physically wiping out the country off the map, but rather what he had in mind was a political change that would change the political definition and create a one-state solution, so to speak, to the problem of Arab-Israeli conflict in the region, leading to a kind of democratic government in Palestine. And that is what he had in mind with that statement.
So do you think that the media took that out of context, or do you think he was just oblivious to how aggressive that would sound?
Both. I think he was oblivious. Again, I've said often that Iranians in electing Ahmadinejad elected their George Bush. They are both blinkered fundamentalists, and they are both quite ignorant of the world outside their own country. They never traveled outside their country before they came to power. So, yes, he is pretty oblivious, and everything that he says is very directed at internal consumption. He's unaware of the extent that statements like this will harm the cause of his country. But at the same time, the press will not win any medals for being fair and for reporting accurately his statements.
Great. Thanks for clarifying that. Now, on the nuclear issue, Iran, unlike other nuclear powers like India and Israel, has signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Is Iran actually violating that treaty?
No, Iran is in compliance with that treaty, and not only Iran has accepted that treaty, Iran has also signed an additional protocol that goes beyond what other countries have accepted, and Iran has gone even beyond that additional protocol in allowing inspections of some military sites. So Iran is more than in compliance with NPT, but it looks like that the international pressures are demanding that Iran do something like what they call confidence building measures. In other words, Iran has to prove its innocence, and so it looks like that no matter what kind of additional assurances Iran provides, it whets the appetite of powers, other nuclear powers, to demand for more. And this is, by the way, not lost on Iranian people. The issue of nuclear energy has turned into a nationalist cause and a celebrated cause for people to come together to resist what they perceive to be colonialist pressures on Iran to prevent Iran from having nuclear energy.
So you mentioned that this has become a national issue. Is it only the supporters of Ahmadinejad within Iran that are championing their national right to create nuclear power?
Not at all. Ahmadinejad has a lot of enemies in Iran, first and foremost among the right wing. And by the way, a lot of these extreme statements are made to claim a share in determining Iran's foreign policy that has been taken away from him and given to other right-wing powers. So Ahmadinejad has a lot of detractors in Iran within his own party, and especially among reformers and people who really are not too friendly to the Islamic government. But the issue of nuclear energy is one that is very much agreed upon, and Iranians, regardless of their political leanings, support is a tough stance on nuclear issues. And I might add that the election of Ahmadinejad was in a way a backlash to the ineffective foreign policy of Mr. Khatami, his predecessor, and the idea was that all the soft talk and liberalism of Khatami didn't get Iran anything. Iran cooperated with Americans on the invasion of Afghanistan against the Taliban. All that Iran got under Khatami was a label of being part of the axis of evil. So the leaning towards extremism in the Middle East, whether in Iran or in Palestine, I think is to some extent the result of the policies of United States and European nations in the region.
Coming back to the issue of development of nuclear power and the threat of nuclear weapons, is this as much a case of double standards as the threats posed by Iran as were the allegation over Iraq, so-called or purported weapons of mass destruction?
Yes, I think this is eerily deja vu all over again situation. The insistence that we need to be proactive, and we don't want the warning sign to be a mushroom cloud, basically jumping the gun and shooting from the hip. And the same strategy that got us into Iraq is being followed in the case of Iran. Basically, the argument is that we should not really wait for legal procedures, and the situation is dire, and we shall go ahead with some kind of military action. And so that is basically the same situation. From the Iranian side, of course, people do see it as a double standard at work, because it looks like that one standard is applied to nuclear club members and another one to powers that don't have nuclear weapons. The nuclear club members, and we have quite a few of them in the region, Israel, India, Pakistan, Russia, and these have gotten their nuclear weapons by subterfuge, hiding, and all kinds of their own Manhattan Project, so to speak. And once they get their nuclear weapons, immediately they become concerned about the spread of nuclear weapons. And if you are a country in the region that doesn't have nuclear weapons, this sounds pretty odd and unconvincing. So basically it looks like that this is a double standard and pressures that are brought to bear unjustly, and hence the backlash in Iran in support of developing nuclear energy in Iran.
Now, in the build-up to the U.S.-UK invasion of Iraq, continental European powers publicly tried to hold back the invasion. What role are they now playing in the Iran situation?
Well, it looks like that the EU3 now are inching closer to the American position, and their treatment of Iran, the language of the warnings that they issued to Iran were pretty tough, and from the point of view of Iranians, quite insulting. So it looks like that at this point, European nations, in other words, the three European nations, members of the Atomic Club, seem to be wanting to Iran to provide all kinds of assurances, and they come up with proposals that are, for lack of a better word, silly. The proposal that Iran should enrich its uranium in Russia is just, if you look at it, it just makes absolutely no sense for Iranians to pay for all of the nuclear materials to be shipped to Russia, be enriched there, and come back, and leaving the supply of their energy in the hand of an old rival to the north, empowering Russians and spending a lot of money for something that they illegally have the right under NPT to do in their own country. It makes no sense, and insisting on these kinds of proposals by the European powers and by the United States further infuriates Iranians. So it looks like that the European powers are not really doing much to end the crisis, and unfortunately, again, we are going to some kind of a showdown.
Are there countries, on the other hand, that are interested in cooling down this intensifying crisis?
Well, of course, Russia, Chinese are, and to some extent, again, Russians with this proposal to enrich Iranian uranium in their soil, they have everything to gain and nothing to lose. Chinese, of course, are interested in Iranian oil and gas, and so they really are not too eager to go ahead with the punishments that will come down on Iran should the case be referred to the Security Council. So, again, there are other countries that are trying to calm the situation, but Americans and then, to some extent, Europeans are dead set on referring Iran to the Security Council or on signing off on a bombing of Iran, probably to be carried out by Israel.
Now, earlier you made a comment about George Bush and Ahmadinejad as being mirror images of one another. Do you think that parallel kind of carries further to U.S. neocons pushing for war and Iran's actions?
Yes, I actually once wrote an article comparing the ruling elite in Iran to the neocons in the United States. Both parties, of course, were infuriated by the comparison, but from where I can see, both countries are ruled by these counter-elites that grew up around the margins of academia and rose to power, and what they both have in common is that, and one of the things that they have in common, actually, is that their foreign policy has nothing to do with the national interests of the nation that they are representing, but is a direct result of an extreme ideological view of the world. So Ahmadinejad's insistence on talking about Israel that really has nothing to do with Iranian foreign policy interests, and George Bush's insistence in spreading quote-unquote democracy in the region, they, I think, have very little to do with the national interests of Iran or United States, and they have everything to do with the image, self-important image of these counter-elites who have risen to power.
Ahmad, thank you for joining me this morning, and I appreciate your helping us get a deeper look into this situation.
My pleasure always. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Dr. Ahmad Sadri. He's active in Iranian politics, and he's a professor of sociology at Lake Forest College near Chicago.